session number 10767, rule number 7.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, Rule 7. We were discussing your time in the front line, in the sort of La Bassée-Lens area, in the line there. And we discussed the rum that you had in your water bottle.
Yeah.
What did you actually have to drink to quench your thirst, as opposed to keep warm?
You had nothing on your tea with your tea and breakfast. You'd have to just sip your water, make it last.
You didn't
get some, what should I say, oxos or outlet that, you know, at oxos. We never got anything like that.
But you didn't miss the fact, because you had rum in yours. Did that not mean you couldn't sip your water?
I'd always have get a drink off one of the lads if I wanted one.
Would you ever drink shell hole water?
No, I'd do without first, because it'd be contaminated.
And you were aware of that?
Oh, definitely.
Did you feel thirsty much of the time? Was it a common thing to feel thirsty?
No, I never. I can't recollect being desperately thirsty or anything like that.
So it wasn't a problem to you?
No.
What about other rations? We've done rum, but did you get a cigarette ration?
Yes, you got a small cigarette ration, a flag and one of Union Jack, one or two of these nondescript names, that you got.
And what was the quality of the cigarette like?
Well, the wood ban that a lot of them had, well, that was a very strong cigarette. But they got used to it and that. But at that time, I didn't smoke very much. I had a friend in Colchester that she used to send me chairman cigarettes out. Now and again, came in very handy.
So you'd smoke them?
Oh, yes, yes.
But you didn't, did you take your ration?
Oh, yeah, I should say so.
And what would you do with it?
Well, if somebody would say, have you got a cig to spare, give them one, you know. But we made things do.
Did you find yourself smoking more in the front line than you had before?
Well, I was never a big smoker. I didn't start smoking or drinking till I was about turned 21.
So it didn't affect you? Didn't smoke more at the front?
No. Well, you see, you had to get well under to light up of a night, and you got to keep it covered up while you were smoking it, and that, because you've only got to show a flame or anything, and you get a little reminder that somebody had seen you, spotted your spot where you were. Oh, no, there's a... they were quite good, and there was pipe tobacco for those that smoked a pipe. And it was quite good. We had no complaints about it.
What about washing? Were you expected to keep clean in the trenches, or try to keep clean?
Well, you couldn't do anything at all on the D-Lives. You'd have to wait while you got relieved, and you went right further back, right a long way behind, and got in a barn. And then you could do a bit of spring cleaning.
But in the line, you just had to...
In the line, you never changed anything.
What they
used to do, they used to bring socks up. And they bring whale oil up for you to rub your feet with, which was quite good.
So you had an issue of socks then?
Oh, yes. They come up with a sack full of... And, of course, those had the first dip, got the best socks. You would change your socks, and there'd be a hell of a sight worse than what you were taking off.
What about underclothes? Did you bring in...
Oh, no, you didn't change your underclothing. Not while you was further behind.
Not until you were out of the line?
Yeah.
What about shaving? You mentioned shaving. Were you expected to shave in the line?
No, they didn't... They weren't very, very strict, but it was... you get used to it, and you saved a little bit of what was in your... in your Dixie, and
you
utilise it. Any road, my hair didn't grow very much those days.
So So
and unfortunately, I had a safety razor. They're coming out them days, and most of the elderly fellas use an open razor.
But you didn't.
No.
So you shaved by choice. They didn't force you to. Your officer didn't insist on it.
No.
Did most people do it?
I mean to say, it's a different thing. If you're only doing ceremonial work and parade work, you've got the facilities to utilise the implements that you've got for the shaving and having a bit of a shower and that, you know. Oh no.
So the officers were fairly relaxed about it then?
Oh, yes.
In the line?
Well, I mean to say, it's a different atmosphere. It's a different atmosphere. You never knew who's next.
What about the latrines? You mentioned them briefly.
Well,
what were the latrine arrangements in the front line?
You had to make your own, you see. But as you crawled through to go to this kind of a little pit like with a pole across, there were so many shot through the head by a sniper. That you didn't, you said, no, I'm not going there.
Why was that so risky? I mean, why wasn't it like any other trench, communication trench? Why wasn't it just dug out deeper?
Well, I mean, say it was very narrow. See, for one thing, you don't make a wide one winding backwards very much. But it was convenient, providing there was no danger. And I very rare used it, unless it was night time.
So where would you go?
Well, you see, you got used to it, you see. So you do all your ablutions as you could in the night.
So your body just got used to not going during the day?
Yeah. Well, if you had to go during the day, well, there's nothing like doing it in the trench and then getting your...
Entrenching tool,
blade, and over the top it goes. And then cover it over there, and then. And if there were duck boards, well, of course, you'd find a spot where you could do it without it staying in the trench.
What about paper? Was there any provision, or did you have to find your own?
Well, the best paper that we used to have a good look round, and if we saw a nice big frog leaf, you see...
A what leaf?
Eh?
A what leaf?
Frog leaf.
What's that, sorry?
Well, you see them about this size. Frog leaf. You get it and stick your finger in, right, wipe it, and then clean your nails with it afterwards.
That's what you'd use?
Yes.
Were they plentiful enough?
Were they what?
Were there enough frog leaves about?
Now and again, if there was a clump of grass, we'd use that. You see, you couldn't carry papers about with you or anything unless you got a paper sent out to you, and then you'd use that, you see. Oh, you improvise all the time.
How soon was... Yeah, I mean, you got into the trenches in the Labassie area, the Lens area. How soon was it before you got lice?
Oh, about 3 weeks.
So it wasn't long then?
Not waiting for them.
How did they affect you? Was it...
Well, they're a bit of a nuisance, you know, and they'd come up for air on your neck, you know. Well, you'd just pull them out and throw it away. Yeah. But I was fortunate. I had a friend, a lady friend in Colchester, and she used to send me Harrison's pomade. And I was never lousy after that.
So that worked?
Oh, yes. On your arms, and you didn't go down to your bottom of your stomach because it smarted too much. But, and you'd just me your chest and that, and a bit at the back. And that did the trick. And if I was running short, I'd just let her know, would you please send me another tin of Harrison's pomade? And it was there within 3 days.
So that didn't... You didn't have lice after that?
I didn't. No.
When you did have them before that, did they disgust you at all? I mean, did you know what they were at first?
Oh, you could feel them. Oh, you could feel them. They're as big as your fingernails. Oh, yes.
Had you tried any other methods of getting rid of them before then?
Oh, well, we used to use the candle.
What was that?
Well,
you
take your shirt off, get down to it, and get a lighted candle, and it go right down the seams. Clack, 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 clack. All over the seams. Your shirt, your vest.
That sounds quite difficult to judge, so that besides getting the lice, you don't ruin the shirt. Was it difficult?
Well, you did smear him a bit with a bit of brown flame, you know. But that was no detriment. You didn't feel any discomfort for it being burnt a bit. Oh, yes.
But after you used the pomade, you didn't have to bother with that? Sort of
thing. I didn't have to bother.
What about rats? You mentioned them. Were there a lot of rats in that part of the front?
Well, they came out at night, so you couldn't say whether there was a great deal of them, you know. But there were some knocking about.
Did they come into the trench or into your little
dugout? Oh, no, they knew where to go, you know.
So they were mainly in the Germans,
yes, yes, yes.
Were they a pest? Were they a pest to you at all, or were they just...
No, they were no trouble, really.
They didn't get your food at all, then, or get at it?
Well, we didn't leave any lying about, really. Only the empty bully beef tins, and that's what they were after.
They said you used to shoot at them.
You used to have a little ping-pong at them now and again. You'd put your bayonet on, you see, and lay your rifle, and you'd have your hand on the trigger, and as soon as you saw it quiver, you knew there was one on the line. Bang!
You'd put what on your bayonet? You didn't quite explain. You said you put your bayonet on your rifle.
Yeah, that's right.
Presumably, why would the rat come to the rifle, then?
The what?
Why would the rat come to the rifle? Can you just explain?
Oh, you put a little bit on the end.
Of what?
Of a little bit of bully. A little bit of biscuits, something. And as soon as you felt the rat's name, you just pressed the button and you triggered and bang, it went. Yeah.
Were there any other pests that afflicted you? I mean, you said rats weren't a nuisance, but were mice or anything else?
No.
Were there any dead bodies in the vicinity?
Well, going up the communication trench to the front line, and we'd probably be had to go back for something, like a party, if it's going back further back for something, and you're coming up again, there used to be a leg with a big jack boot on hanging out. And he shouts out, as you come to a damaged duckboard, he shouts out, all in the duckboard. And the next man would step over, all in the duckboard, you see. And then you, foot sticking out, you duck under it. Till after about a week, somebody chopped it off and buried it. But it was a bit of a surprise, you know. What we used to do is to pat it. How are you, Jerry?
Were there many bodies like that about? Or were there any left in no man's land?
Sometimes. I remember one, your little bullish has got out, you see. I remember one, he lay there, and it was a Scotch soldier, ginger-haired lad, a big lad, and his kilt had blown over his face, and he was naked then, you see. And he was like that for over a week before they went and moved him and buried him.
Was there any problem with the smell of any of these bodies left?
You could smell death. Death and powder. You could smell it.
What type of a smell was it? I know it's difficult to
describe. Imagine a fire in the house. Similar to that. Smoke, you know.
Well, did you find it upsetting, the smell?
Took no notice.
What would happen when someone was killed in the trenches? I mean... Well, within then, the trench, what would you
do? Well, then you sent word back, and a couple of fellas, three fellas, had come up with a stretcher, and they'd carry him the best way they could, round the bend, round this bend, and lift him up. All you'd be showing was him on the stretcher, and he'd be taken right back and buried at spot for the bat, you see, with a cross on him.
Would anybody, who would record the fact that the person had been killed and keep the identity tags and things like that? How was that all sorted out?
Well, every soldier had two discs on a string around his neck. And if he got dead, you get a sandbag and you take all his belongings, money and everything, ring or, and paybook and everything, and you'd put one disc in there and leaving one round the neck. And then when he got further back, they got a record of him. And then that would be taken down to company headquarters, to battalion headquarters, and it would be registered on the day and date and everything, you see.
Now, you got there in March.
And his belongings would be sent back to his family or parents or... Yes, he got there.
You got there in March, and you were there until round about June. Yes. What was the weather like during that...
Well, we were on that little outpost, you know, and I was on the centre light, you know, and I was sat on the top, you know, and the snow came down, and in the morning it was 6 inches deep, and of course we go back onto the original line, and the trenches started to slide in, so we got to do the double rush. Getting it back as fast as we could.
That was snow in June, I think.
In June, early June, yes.
What about the rest of the weather? Was it cold and wet? Or?
Well, you see, you're so much clobber on you, you should be warm, you know. You should be warm. And then when you're young, your blood's warm. See, but anybody a bit older would feel it and that. And same as like your trench feet. And that with your socks always 9 times out of 10 being wet, and then you get a cold spell coming along. Well, of course they used to go back, and of course would go back to hospital, and then when they were fit, they were shoved back up in the line again.
Did you have any trouble with trench feet, or did you mention the whale oil earlier?
Well, I used the whale oil, you see, and the only grump I had about it. It was that you got a worse pair of socks, half burnt and whatnot. You see, you had what was left. And it was always the same story right throughout the war. The private, he was the last man, and he got the last man's what was left. See?
So, what about, did the wet conditions, did they cause any other problems? Other than trench feet, which you didn't suffer from, but...
No, I don't think so, unless people got a bit rheumatic and something like that. No, it didn't affect me at all.
So you coped with the cold and the wet quite well?
I coped very well indeed.
Were there any other diseases or that you might be aware of? For instance, was there any of them, what they call trench fever or PUO, pyrexia of unknown origin, any of that?
Well, I never saw any of it, really. I never saw of it anything. But if a chap was poorly or anything like that, well, you send him further back and somebody would take him to the MO. So and the MO thought that he was beyond repair. Well, he put a ticket on him and sent him further back to a clearing station.
Was there much ill health in the battalion? Or your company? More
no, or? No, there wasn't so bad.
What about dysentery? Any dysentery?
Well,
or upset tummies.
I was never affected with it. I was never affected with it. I suppose sometimes they got the runs and whatnot. But you see, you didn't have a variation of food. You had the same old stuff, you see. And if you were on, today, as you get older, you've got to be very careful what you eat, eh? And otherwise, I've got to watch it. And something, she said, will you have so-and-so? I said, no.
What about, so dysentery wasn't a problem to you, or the runs?
No, more or less affected the dysentery in Egypt and outside there. The Dardanelles.
What about scabies? Was there any scabies or any other skin diseases?
No, No, I never heard of any, but I should imagine that the transport people might get a touch of that.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, the horses and cattle.
So your health, did you have any trouble at all with anything?
No, I never had to go to the MO, only once.
When was that?
Oh, twice. Well, I'm jumping the gun, you see.
Okay, we'll come back to them then. But yeah. You didn't have to go while you were at on the loose road.
No.
If we look now at sort of the daily routine, starting from stand to, did you have a stand to in your battalion in the morning?
Everybody up in the line stood to at dawn and stood to at dusk.
And what was standing to?
Well, you manned your post. You stand on in the bay, and you'd have your rifle there, and the officer might be passing to see that everybody it might be, or the company sergeant major, but the left of you says you have to stand to, right? So nobody'd ever come to you, and of course when it come daylight, stand down. You see, because it was a practice that. They must have had an imagination that he'd attack at dawn or he'd attack at dusk. You see, you give you a surprise attack.
Now, when you stood to, would you all look over the top or just the delegated sentry?
I never went over the top to attack.
No, look over the top.
Look, oh yes, we had such a thing as a periscope, you see, and it was a long box arrangement. With a glass handle and a glass at the handle at the top. And you looked into it and you got full view. But you didn't start making a practice of waving it and moving it. You'd hold it and you'd look and you got a good view of the area.
And who'd look through that? Just the sentry or would you all have them and look?
You could all have a look at it.
How many would you have?
Well, they were very rare indeed. I used one once, but they never bothered because... When it was daylight, you'd go to where there was perhaps be a nick or something, and you'd have a good view of the what was in front of you.
What do you mean by a nick?
Well, something you could see without being observed.
You mean like a gap in the sandbag?
That's right.
Well, during the data, now you were a Lance Corporal when you went out there. When did you get promoted again?
Well, I got we went out in the March. And I was promoted about 6 weeks after to corporal. And then another 2 or 3 months to Lance Sergeant.
So you'd be a Lance Sergeant while you were still in the loose area then?
No. No, I was only a Lance Corporal while we were there. When we moved up to... It was at Bethune, Lewis area, Lens area. I was promoted to corporal, and then as we moved up towards Newport, I was promoted to Lance Sergeant.
So during
and the then day, in November, I was promoted to Sergeant.
Now, during the day then, while we were on the loose front, what was your... What was your job as corporal? What would you do during the day, a typical day?
If it was possible, you'd probably do a bit of digging or straightening up. You see, you get a gang of men and say, come on. And we'd be undercover, you see, and repairing the duckboards and that, you see. The duckboards was fastened in with like a kind of two staves like that with a board across. You got me? Eh? Like that, see. And then, of course, the duckboard rested on that, you see.
Sort of H shape. H shape, like that.
We're down here, you see. That. Two staves, and that being the earth, you see. That was the width of your trench. And pretty wide, you know. And then the duckboard would rest on that.
And you'd do that sort of thing during the day?
Yes.
What else would you do in the day as a corporal? What were your other responsibilities?
Well, I didn't do so very much, only watching others do some. You know, what they were sent to do or whatever it was. Such as it was of the water, you see. We Well, we'd moved from that front to the right on Owens Holland Redoubt, and that was a big chalk pit. And we weren't exactly in the front line was further up, and we were in immediate reserve there. And of course, we were in bits of dugouts and whatnot, and we didn't do so bad there, pretty quiet. But one day, I was sent with half a dozen men off to right back, a good way, to get some tins of water, petrol tins, you see, for the cooks. And we all had two each, tied with string, you know, over your shoulder. And we set off, and there was a big chap there, and he dumped him. I said, "What are you doing?" "Yeah, I'm not carrying that," he said. I said, "Don't be daft," I said. "Get it on your shoulder." "Not lightly." I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yes." "Okay," I said. So I carried four of them. And by the time I got to our destination, I was buggered. So the sergeant said, "What's up, Fitz?" That's what I told him. I said, "So and so dumped his water, and I've had to carry it." And I said, I want some rest now." And he said, "Oh, righto." He'd see to him. Well, we never saw that fella again. He'd get a right bashing. And he said, "Oh, we used to do little odd jobs, you know." He said, "Stay where you are today." So I did do. And when it was getting good, just before dusk, he come in, and I said, "Oh, you're just in time." And I had a tin of McConaughey on that I had. And we whacked it. He said, "Bloody hell," he said. That was smashing.
Yeah. And what would you do? That was when you're in immediate reserve at Owens Holland Redoubt. Yeah. What about more normal days when you're actually in the front line?
You did nothing.
Would you sleep during the day?
Yes, you could have a snooze, yes. Because it'd be a tough time for you if you was got to sleep at night. And one young lad on that front, he was having a junction, you see, going back a communication trench, and officer come along, and he stood right in front of him, and the poor little devil was asleep. He got a good hiding for it.
Who from?
From headquarters.
You don't mean a good hiding, though. You mean he'd be told off.
He'd be punished for it. He'd perhaps be tied to the wheel for a week so that everybody could see him. Sacrificed.